He's right about that. It's me. Okay, I think I had four different people this week make comments about they were very concerned about the performance of their memory. Now, sometimes that's a little bit unusual for a person to say that, because a lot of times what a person does is, if their memory is not what it should be, here's a typical conversation right here. This is called episodic memory. It just means, tell me about an episode from the day before. So that's the very first part of the memory that goes before a person develops dementia, or if you want to say Alzheimer's, just think in terms of they're losing their cognitive function. Memory's part of it. But if you ask a person, what'd you have for lunch yesterday? And if their answer kind of goes like this, well, I remember taking out the trash yesterday, and on the way to the trash can, I saw a cat. And, I think my neighbor likes that cat. Anyway, the point that I'm getting to is they'll do everything they can to answer the question without answering the question. And I think that's a pretty typical way to kind of cover up. They try to use a lot of words, but that doesn't really help. What we want to do is we want to get to the crux of the matter. I came across this article right here. It's from the year, I don't even know. Well, I think, okay. Oh, here it is right here, 2011. Okay, I'm going to read the abstract to you. And, of course, what I want to do is we might as well just jump right into it and start talking about, I can't cover every single topic about memory, but what I can do is I can cover bits and pieces in such a way that you can get a takeaway on what can I do to help myself. Okay, here's the abstract. And this is really simple right here. If people aged over 50, I don't know many people over 50, I just know a few, if they take a supplement with a highly absorbable form of curcumin every day, their memory improves. Nutritional scientists from the David Geffen School of Medicine in Los Angeles reported this in the American Journal of Geriatric Psychiatry. Okay. I do not subscribe to that journal because it probably costs $2,000 a year for four volumes. Not going to do it. Here's a study right here. The researchers gave 21 healthy people, they were somewhere between 50 all the way up to 90 years of age. Isn't that amazing? They found a person that was 90, that was healthy. I like that. For 18 months, they gave them two doses of 90 milligrams of a supplement called Theracumin. You might want to write that down if you're interested. They say that Theracumin is a highly absorptive curcumin dispersed with colloidal nanoparticles. They go on to write that the bioavailability of Theracumin is 27 times larger than that of regular curcumin, and their reference point is the Biological Pharmaceutical Bulletin 2011. I didn't look that up. I mean, I could have, but, I just didn't. You only got so much time, so you pick and choose what you're going to read and what you're not going to read. They said they had a control group of 19 individuals, so what we got is 21 healthy people. They gave them 90 milligrams of Theracumin, which is curcumin, twice a day for 18 months. So shortly before the experiment began, and then again afterwards at the 6-month mark, 12, and the 18 months of administration, the researchers determined that the memory function of the study participants, what they used was, it's called the Buschke Selective Reminding Test, SRT. What that does is it measures verbal memory. And then the other test they look at is called the Consistent Long-Term Recall, or the Consistent Long-Term Recall Score. And what they do in that test is they let the test subjects hear 12 words, and immediately thereafter, they have to tell which words they have remembered. And they do this 12 times in a row. 12 times, 12 words. You get the gist of it. They're trying to determine how good is the performance of their memory. So here's the results. They said that the administration of the Theracumin improved the participant's scores on the test. Okay, you can't see the graph in the chart, but let me explain it this way. The placebo group, which is the group of individuals over a year and a half or 18 months, they didn't get any curcumin at all. Or if you want to call it turmeric, I'm okay with that also. And what I can see on the chart is their memory, there's a little bit of a drop-off. Maybe if I say a slight drop-off, I'm not saying that to be judgmental or rude, but over 18 months, if you're above the age of 50, you might lose a little bit of your verbal memory or your recall, just slightly. Is that okay if I say it that way? Now, it's different with the curcumin group. Now, this one is very interesting. It kind of shoots up almost like a rocket ship trying to get into the upper part of the stratosphere, heading to outer space. And then over the next 18 months, it gradually improves and gets better and better. So every time I see a graph like this where it's better at 18 months and it's still going up, as compared to where there's no curcumin, it's going down. It's just slightly, though. I don't want to be guilty of, like, over-exaggerating what I'm looking at here. But what we want is, if it just keeps consistently getting better at 18 months, you don't really have to be a rocket scientist. You see here what I'm saying? That the longer that you're consistent with the supplement of taking turmeric or curcumin as a supplement, maybe the better that memory gets. Okay, this is the next part of it right here, which I find this super, super interesting because I've read so much about this and I'm, you know, tying it together in my mind. It says the researchers gave the test subjects a radioactive substance before and after the supplementation that attaches itself to broken amyloid beta proteins that they find in the brains of people or the brain cells of people that have dementia. You with me on that? Kind of a radioactive tracking monitor to see where it's going. Now, they came back and they did what are called PET scans, and they showed that in some parts of the brain, the hypothalamus and the amygdala, I kind of like talking about those. I want everyone listening to have a very healthy hypothalamus. As a matter of fact, it might be like a very, I should say, an extremely important master control gland of the body. But when they took the curcumin, they had much lower levels of the amyloid beta proteins and even the tau proteins. Those are what you see like in dementia compared to people that didn't use the theracumin, or that's the name of the supplement. Of course, I know that part of the brain doesn't necessarily have anything to do with memory, but that's what they were looking at. I don't know all the reasons why. But basically, believe me, you don't want an accumulation of beta amyloid plaque or proteins in the brain. You don't want to have tau proteins building up. You just don't. So there's something about curcumin. If I said turmeric, it's good at helping kind of keep the brain clean. Maybe that's your first takeaway besides taking the theracumin. It's so much easier to keep your brain in better working order instead of waiting until you're completely broken down. You know, I know that's the strategy of a whole lot of people. They wait till their body or their health is in about as worse or the worst situation of all time before they take action. You don't even know how many phone calls I get where somebody says, I'm in dire straits, and then I ask a follow-up question, how long have you been in bad shape? And they said, but Dr. Morgan, it's an emergency. I'm going, well, but how long has it been? And they may say something like 6 years. And I keep thinking, well, why is it emergency? No, I know why. I know why psychologically and emotionally. But the bottom line is, when God's designed the body to warn you and to alert you when things aren't right, it'd be good if you paid attention to that. And it also would be very, very good if you were very proactive. Does that make sense? I'm going to read to you the closing statement or the paragraph by the researchers. This is what they say. Our positive findings that daily use of theracumin, a bioavailable form of curcumin, improves memory, and it also decreases amyloid, and tau, that's T-A-U, binding proteins in the amygdala and the hypothalamus. And they're encouraging because this is a relatively inexpensive and non-toxic treatment that may have a potential not only for improving age-related memory decline, but also preventing or possibly staving off the progression of neurodegeneration and eventually the future of Alzheimer's disease. I got the date wrong. It was 2017, October 27th, the American Journal of Geriatric Psychiatry. That's kind of good to know, isn't it? Okay, I'm not going to read this article to you, but here's what it says. Here's the highlight. Less carbs, better memory. You want to destroy yourself? Eat a whole bunch of carbohydrates. You can do it pretty easy. Does that make sense? Okay. The phone number here at the station, which is KBJS, is 903-589-8507. If nobody calls, I have my next article that I find interesting. The cool part about this is I get to decide which articles I want to read, or what I want to talk about, or what the topic of the day is. And you know, every topic that I come up with, there's got to be some takeaway if you're paying attention where you're thinking, well, I could do that, and I could do that. I just heard Dr. Morgan talk about that, and my memory's not so great, so maybe I could take some curcumin or turmeric. Okay, here's the next one right here. And you'll figure this out pretty quick, but there's a reason why I'm reading this one to you. Actually, let's go to the phone lines first since somebody's trying to call. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I better get over here and turn off my radio.
Yeah, turn off the radio. Thanks. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, it's off.
Okay.
I'm calling for a niece. I talked with her last night. She's been in good health all these years. She's not one of those that you just mentioned about waiting till the last minute. But all of a sudden, she's been diagnosed with AFib, and she can't sleep. She's sleeping 2 to 3 hours a night, and she has to force herself to eat. She just has no appetite, but she's making herself eat. The doctors don't know what's causing it. She's had all kinds of the scans and all of that. They want to put her on Eliquis, and she had to have some stents put in several years ago. It's been at least 10 years.
You mean, and all of a sudden now, after all those stents in her heart arteries, she still doesn't understand that she's not in good shape? I'm not trying to be rude, but that just sounds borderline ridiculous.
Well, I guess it does, but I mean, she's healthy. She's been able to go and
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
No. All I was going to say, maybe we have two different considerations here, and sorry, I'm kind of blunt sometimes.
But if a person's had
very, very significant severe heart disease, so bad that they require stents, I don't know why she would present herself as all of a sudden, now I've got this problem. I had no idea there was a problem. Well, maybe the stents would be a pretty good indication she had a problem. Does that make sense?
Well, that she had a problem, but if after that was done and she didn't restrict her in any way, I was thinking that, you know, that meant she was healthy and doing good.
Oh, okay.
From that point on.
Fair enough. I got you. But in fact, that's not the case at all.
Okay.
The case is she was not in good working order to begin with. And so here's what I want to suggest to you. Do you know what diabetes is?
Yes.
Is there any chance that she has diabetes?
I don't know, but I'll tell her to ask them to check on it.
Well, and let me tell you why I'm saying that. If I wanted to find a pretty good way to clog up the arteries that feed the heart, having diabetes is a pretty good way to do that. So there's a very simple blood test that just about all doctors do. It's called hemoglobin A1C. And what it does is it gives you a good, I'm going to say, 3-month average, just for simplicity, of what your blood sugar is. And so it's telling me how crunchy your arteries are, how sticky and gooey your arteries are. And so if your niece, if her hemoglobin A1C is 4.5, 4.6, 4.7, then that would be one thing I'm wrong about. But it's, if it's 5.6, 5.7 or above, then that means she's got pretty crunchy, sticky, crusty arteries. And so what we want to do is we want to come to terms with that and find out what can we do to reverse that.
Mm-hmm.
The other simple test is just fasting insulin levels. And so, and the reason I'm saying this is one of the greatest influencers of a person developing AFib.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a lot of ways that we can do this. So basically what I'm referring to is, how metabolically healthy is she? And if her hemoglobin A1C is 4.6, then I'm probably on the wrong track on that topic. But if you want to develop AFib, having blood sugar issues, that's going to be a primary driver or influencer of developing AFib. The other ones are pretty simple to talk about, too. Do you know what the term physical fitness means?
Think I do.
Okay, yeah. Well, I just wanted to make sure. So if when people are very, very fit, when their heart is very physically fit, the risk of having AFib goes way, way down. So if I just asked you simply, is your niece really physically fit?
Well,
I mean, you don't have to think about it that much. You know, do you think that she's physically fit?
Yes. I always have thought that, because she does her own yard work. She walks and goes to exercise classes.
That sounds great. I like the sound of that. Uh-huh. Okay, so the other factors that I would look at, and I'm just going to kind of go down my mental list here. There's another substance that's in the blood called triglycerides. To the best of my knowledge, when you're fasting, triglycerides are above 90. The higher that goes, the greater the risk toward developing atrial fibrillation. So I don't really know what hers are, but I'm giving you pretty good fuel for thought here. So you can say, could you look at your blood work and just see? Because I'm just digging for clues. Now, really, really easy things for me to talk about would be this. If a person has some blood sugar issues, well, then we just need to run toward, what do we do to correct those? And she's already physically fit, according to you, so I believe you. Mm-hmm. Would you believe me also? One of the studies that I looked at probably about 4 or 5 months ago, all they were doing is trying to tie in a correlation between magnesium levels in a person's blood. And so one of the simple ways that your doctor would probably test that on you or on her, there's a test called serum magnesium. And I would say, as a general rule, when serum magnesium is 2.3 or below, you got a much greater risk of developing AFib. You just get all this, you lose, there's a node on the atrium called the sino or the SA node. It's kind of like the pacemaker of the heart. It plays a huge role, but if that gets out of sync, and you, basically what AFib is, it's like an electrical thunderstorm of the heart. it's just like electric shock. So a lot of times a doctor will go in there and burn them, or they'll do like a watchman's procedure, or they'll do drugs like Eliquis. But man, Eliquis has got all these long-term side effects that she's going to have to deal with. So what I'm thinking of is, what's going to get her to a much, much better place, to where she can be in better working order. Now, I do know this also. I've read research saying if a person has a problem with one of the valves, like if they had a mitral valve prolapse, I'm pretty sure that would be a risk factor also. The other risk factor is, if you're the president of Ukraine, and you argue with Donald Trump, that may be an independent risk factor of being prone to developing AFib. So does that relate to her?
No. No, but she does tend to get upset over all this stuff.
Well, I think it's good to take a step back and like look at all of it, but you don't want to stress yourself out over something you can't control, do you?
That's right. That's
okay.
Right.
So in the realm of things, I'm still going to go with what I'm telling you, even if it doesn't make logical sense. You could explain to me that you think she's perfect health wise. I still want to keep an open mind and look at her hemoglobin A1C. And I want to look at her insulin levels. I don't know if you've ever heard of this test before, but there's a test called C-reactive protein. Oh, my goodness. You want to find out how inflamed the heart is, or if there's some inflammation present, or something's not working right? That's like a really, really good test. It tells you directly, is there any inflammation in those arteries, the coronary blood vessels that actually feed and nourish the heart and give it oxygen and fuel.
Okay, now what was the test?
It's called C. When I say C, I'm just talking about a capital letter C.
Okay.
And then the next two words are reactive protein. So it's called C reactive protein. Sometimes they call it CRP for short, and that'll work too. But man, you know what that's going to tell you? That's going to tell you conclusively if she's really in good shape or not. Now, the other thing, I know I'm getting sidetracked slightly, but it's still the same topic. If her blood sugar is perfectly normal, like on just a glucose test, so if she wakes up in the morning and she measures her glucose and it's right at the number 75, I'd say that's great, excellent. But what if the hemoglobin A1C is like 5.7 or 5.8? You know what that means? That means she's got a low-grade infection. And that's where my mind goes when it comes to a woman that requires stents. There may be a possibility that she's got some type of a low-grade infection. I was kind of making a joke with a guy yesterday. He's an engineer, and I said, do you know what the word stealth pathogen means? And he said, you mean a pathogen that wants to be stealthy in the body? I'm going, yeah. Well, and that's the way that bugs and germs are, whether it's a bacteria or a fungus or a parasite or a virus. They want to live and hide in the body where they can do what they want. They can have a free meal and they can just hang out. But they want to hide from your white blood cells because they don't want to be eaten. And so you've got some super, super simple things that she can look at. And we're trying to find out how she's out of balance, because if we can figure out how she's out of balance, then that makes it very easy. So, for example, if her magnesium levels come back at 2.1, then I would say she's got some very significant work to do. Now, there is an amino acid called taurine. I'm going to spell it T-A-U-R-I-N-E. Okay. Now, that's a famous one right there because, you know, the human body is mainly made of amino acids. And taurine is a very unique sulfur-bound amino acid. But if I'm not mistaken, there are multiple studies that demonstrate when somebody has atrial fibrillation, they may have a most significant deficiency of taurine. So what happens when you don't have enough taurine? There's a whole bunch of repairs that don't take place to the heart. It's kind of why I'm telling you that.
Okay.
And so basically, we're looking at trying to get her hormonal fitness, her metabolic fitness. If I say metabolic, if I just say the word metabolism, what I really mean is, how efficiently and cleanly does her body take fuel, like sugar or fat, and convert it into energy? And if it doesn't do a good job of that, then we got a problem. And there's a lot more I can tell you, but I think I'm giving you information. So what I'm looking at is maybe she's got an omega-3 fatty acid deficiency. Because as a general rule, when they have all these companies now, they'll do the test for you. It's called the omega-3 fatty acid index test. All you do is take a couple of drops of blood, put it on this little card, ship it to the laboratory. And what they're going to do is they're going to measure the concentration of omega-3 fatty acids, you know, like the kind that you would get from eating salmon. They're going to measure them, and we're going to find out if she's normal or not. But I can tell you this, when you start hitting about 9 to 12%, you don't really have heart problems. When you start hitting low, like 4 and 5%, those people have all the problems. So all I'm suggesting is there's a Goldilocks just right amount of taurine for the human heart. There's a Goldilocks just right amount of magnesium and omega-3 fatty acids and coenzyme Q10 and vitamin D and K2 and potassium. I've totally forgot to mention B vitamins. But anyway, you get where I'm coming from. So I bet you anything, that's just a figure of speech, that if we looked at her blood work and actually examined her and looked at her diet, we would find some pretty good things to look at. Another thing that I didn't even think of until right now is the consumption of coffee. What role would you guess that coffee, especially more than six, I mean, caffeine in coffee, in some people, that's a definite trigger for AFib. Does she drink coffee?
Yeah. I don't know how much, but...
Right. Yeah. No, we're on the same page on this, but there's always a level of coffee that if you get above a certain level, you're asking for AFib. I mean, the human body cannot...
Is that level different on everybody?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just like let's just say that I have two listeners today to the program, you and one other person. Both of you are going to be biochemically unique individuals. You're not going to be identical. Mm-hmm. Would you like it if the world was filled with identical clones of you?
Oh, no.
I wouldn't like it if it was me. So everybody's got a unique variability. And so for one person, they might get away with drinking two pots of coffee a day. But for the rest of us, it may be enough to throw her toward AFib. See, the heart, the structure of the heart changes with age. It just does. And I hear what you're telling me about exercise, but I don't know anything about what the metrics of her body are besides what you're telling me.
Right.
I'm just like anybody else, so I'm just not going to really... Okay, don't take what I'm saying the wrong way. I believe that she has AFib. I'm just not willing to believe for one second that she's in a good place. I don't believe that at all. I believe... AFib is a direct result of poor condition of the body. And if we don't, okay, what happens if I'm the type of doctor that says, oh, you're okay, I'm okay, everything's hunky-dory, you don't really have any room for improvement, it's just the way it is, it's just genetics. How would you like it if I said that? You would say, you're not telling the truth. I need you to tell me specifically what are the things that I can look at so I can help myself. So it doesn't do a lick of good beating around the bush. So if she's got AFib, that means she's not in good health.
And all these things you've told me are ways she can check out.
Yeah, I've given you just a teeny tiny few things to look at that could prove to be beneficial if she's got an open mind. And really, that's all this stuff takes is a person's got to be willing to learn something new about their body. And so, for example, what if she looked at these things and they're not actually in a good, healthy range? Do you think that would make her curious to say, oh my goodness, how come my doctor didn't tell me this? Or how come the nurse didn't cover this topic? Well, it's in her best interest to cover it. But I'm just willing to believe if she's all of a sudden got AFib and she can't sleep at night and she's having to force herself to eat and she's in dire straits and she's got massive amounts of stress... Well, I'm willing there's other parameters also. Like, for all I know, she's a worrywart. I don't mean that in a bad way. But, I mean, you can just see these things coming from a mile away. It may be that she's really wrestled with self-imposed or self-induced stress. You know, there's people that when they lay down in bed at night, they can't turn their mind off. They think about everything that's bad that's ever happened to them for the last 50 years.
Well, she's had a hard life.
Now we're getting somewhere because for all I know, she might be so severely depleted that she's just got a boatload of... I'll tell you this right here. There is a chemical that your adrenal glands produce called adrenaline. There is nothing that I know of that's brutal to the heart like adrenaline is. You know what would keep a woman from sleeping at night? Too much adrenaline. You know what would make a woman nauseous and lose her appetite? Too much adrenaline. So I would say that we're on the right track on this, and so she's had a hard life, but it still doesn't change the fact that we've got to run toward what the problem is. And so I think you're getting me a lot closer to figuring this out. She has high levels of adrenaline, most likely.
Okay.
Or maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe she feels so calm and relaxed and happy and peaceful and joyous right now, where she's thinking, this is so amazing. I feel so good. I'm so grateful to God. You know what the opposite of that would be? This is terrifying. I can't take it anymore. I'm so uneasy, this is nerve-wracking. I'm nervous and jittery. Which one is it? Which one is she right now?
I've never seen her to be nervous and jittery, but she's been under stress for years.
I know,
years.
But here's what we have now. I'm just using your word. She can't sleep and she can't eat.
Right.
Am I right about that? Am I quoting you correctly?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so...
Yes, you are.
So that's what we
I'm saying is you don't see outward signs of stress with her. You know, you said jumpy and jittery and all.
Well, do you ever talk to her?
Yeah.
Okay. Does she bring up the past a lot on the phone?
No.
Okay. Well, I think you got plenty of stuff to work on here. I'll tell you that
adrenaline gland will be a target.
Let me tell you one thing that I've learned by reading research on this topic fairly recently. I'll say within the last 2 or 3 months, but I find it so interesting. There is an electrolyte called sodium.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you get that? Well, you might get it from eating celery, or you might get it from eating, you know, salt. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So this is an electrolyte that is so essential to the human body to keep your body in great working order. Here's what happens, though. If she is not meeting her sodium needs, when sodium levels are lower than what they should be, or maybe what I should say is, if they're lower than ideal, then there's a chemical trigger within the kidneys and the adrenal glands that tells your body, start making more adrenaline. And adrenaline is what adrenaline can be causing or contributing to her AFib. Would you believe me if I told you that 50% of all the high blood pressure medications that are prescribed today in America are called beta blockers? Beta blockers do one thing, they block adrenaline. They're a drug that tries to block all the excessive adrenaline the person's consuming or producing. So is she taking a blood pressure medication?
Yes.
Yeah.
Her blood pressure's high.
So do you see how we're starting to figure this out right now?
So
the reality of it is she's not in good working order, and we have to run toward what the problem is. So
yes. Well,
I think I've done as much as I can today, and I mean, this is just so hard. I mean, you're asking a good question, but it's impossible because I don't have the person in front of me on the phone themselves. But
right.
I do respect you want to help.
She can't get your radio program.
She doesn't have a computer?
So, yeah, she does.
You just type in kbjs.org and she's got it. She could be listen to you right now, yeah.
Oh, so she could call in herself next week.
Well, that's called the phone line. If she dials the number, then she has access. Or she goes to kbjs.org, she's got access.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, there's no limitations there.
Well, now, can she call in if her only access is the computer?
She can call in if she has a phone.
Yeah, but
so she doesn't have a phone.
but she can't. Oh, that's right. You'd be talking to her on the phone.
Yeah, it's the same way as you're calling me right now. There's no difference. I know. I'm not going to make fun of it. It's okay though. But you just figured it.
Laughing at myself.
No. I know. But it's okay. But this is a good process because you figured out that she can call just like you did. But what she needs to do is she needs to ask her doctor why she's got AFib. And the next thing is she needs to become a very curious girl and start studying these topics for herself because it's her health that's in the crosshairs.
Yes. Now, well, I think she's just not known what to do. So you've given me a lot of good information for her.
Yep, you betcha.
I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. I hope you have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, the phone number here is 903-589-8507. You know what? I just learned something new. I just learned that if you want to talk to me, all you got to do is dial that number, 903-589-8507, and I could actually talk to you. See, here's a person that I'm fixing to talk to that just dialed the number. Oh, good morning. Hi, this
good
is
morning,
Dr.
sir.
How are you today?
I'm doing well. Entertained, and life is that way. Just listening to
you're right. Life is that way.
My wife had the flu a month ago. She went to the clinic and they tested. She was clear of COVID and it was just the flu, type A, I guess. And she's doing better, but she has this prolonged cough.
Yeah.
That it scares me being around her and in the bed. It just doesn't want to go away.
Is that the part that scares you?
Yes.
Well, are you scared because you're thinking this could turn for the worse?
No, it's a deep cough and it's a rattling cough and
okay.
My attention that she's sicker than she's letting me know, but this cough just doesn't want to go away. Is there something that she can do to help revive the functions of the lungs?
Man, I love the way you're wording that. You must be like a highly intelligent thinker.
I listen to you often, but
I don't know what the correlation is there. But yeah, can we just sort of tackle this piece by piece? And if I don't go in perfect order, you know, just cut me some slack on that. Okay. Have you ever heard of a substance called vitamin D3?
Yes, sir.
I think the active name is called cholecalciferol, but if you say D3, that's all we need to know, really. So there's a certain amount of D3 that your body requires to maintain the health of the brain and the bones. If you want to help the muscles and the heart, then you got to take quite a bit more than that. If you want enough D3 to help rebuild and then recalibrate your immune system, you might have to take a considerable amount. I'm probably going overboard slightly, but she may have to take if she wants to rejuvenate and she wants her immune system to rise to the occasion and remove any last vestige of an infection in the lowest lobes of her lungs that's rattling and deep, that she may want to take a little bit more vitamin D than what her doctor would feel comfortable with. She may have to hit 20,000 units a day for like 3 weeks to give her immune system a chance to heal. Okay, point number two. Now, I'm only telling you what I think works on this, so you can let me know what you think, but if it were me, I would take a steam kettle, flip the whistling part of the lid open, and what you're doing is you're trying to bring that water to a hard boil where like a hefty, vaporous, you know, stream of steam's coming out blasting toward your face. But what I want her to do is put a spoonful of an herb it's a flower called thyme or thyme, if you want to call it a spice.
Okay.
Just put that in the steam kettle and just deeply breathe the medicinal vapors, which means She's got to be committed to breathing deeply for about 4 to 5 seconds to make sure we can get that medicinal steam down to her lungs. If she doesn't,
she sleeps with a BiPAP machine.
So she's got a lot of other issues then. I mean, she's done that for years. Well, then yes, she's got a lot of bad issues for years. I'm not trying to tell you what to do, but this means she's not in good shape. That's probably the cause of it right there. If you want to get one lung infection after the other, a BiPAP or a CPAP's a pretty good way to do that. I mean, have you ever looked at the studies on the germs that just are blasted, that the machine's shoving into you every night? It's almost like you're breathing toxic, filthy air. It's true. Anyway, enough of that.
Yeah.
I realize that's not going to be a fun conversation, but what I would encourage your wife to do is let's take this situation and let's greatly improve your health where you're feeling really, really good. You sleep well at night. You get plenty of oxygen to your lungs because you can actually breathe it on your own. And you wake up totally refreshed with enough energy to get up and say, I think I should wash and wax my husband's pickup today because I feel so energetic. Amen. That's right. I mean, that may not have been the best choice, but I think it's a pretty good one.
Right.
And then I have so much extra energy, I can cook him breakfast, lunch, and supper. You know, I'm sort of joking about that. Okay, so if she breathes the time, we're going to see if we can kind of steam clean her lungs, okay? She could go to bed every single night by taking some castor oil and just rubbing the castor oil all over her lung fields, just anywhere on the chest or back. She could borrow one of your old T-shirts so she didn't get hers dirty with oil, and she could go to bed with a castor oil all over her chest. Or if you say the lungs.
Okay.
Now, the reason they call vitamin A vitamin A is because it's known as the anti-infection vitamin. So, if it were me, I'm going to tell you exactly what I would do. If you do not own a juicer, I'd get one if you want her to live. And all I would do is... she does already? Man, tell her I said way to go. I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that part of the conversation. Let's go back to the juicer. Wait,
yes, sir.
Is it covered in dust? Never mind, I'm joking. So what you want to do is, if you want to greatly bolster the immune system, this is my favorite immune remedy right here, or one of them, when it comes to juicing. 2 carrots, 1 lemon, a small chunk of ginger. So you take your paring knife, remove the outer part of the peel of the lemon. You leave as much of the white pith as possible, because in that pith you have all these flavonoid compounds that are like so super awesome for the immune system. So just run the lemon through the juicer, 2 carrots and a chunk of fresh ginger root. Dried ginger don't work, but the fresh stuff does. You know what? If you go to the store and you buy carrots, a lemon, and ginger, what do they have in common? They're all alive. You could actually plant the ginger root, and guess what's going to happen? It's going to grow. The lemon, it's sort of alive, but you could take the seeds and plant a tree, couldn't you? Or grow a tree. Same with carrots. So they'll grow. So she needs to do that twice a day. So we'll just plug in the juicer. You can go to the store for them, buy her lemons and carrots. Today it's super easy. You can buy organic carrots if you want to and organic lemons. But I think this is going to give her a big bang for the buck, and I think you'll see her fortunes turn around big time. Another thing that you could do that would be very simple, very easy, there's a type of herbal tea known as mullein tea. Have you ever heard of mullein?
No, sir.
I guarantee you, if somebody showed you it growing along a fence line, you would never forget what it looks like. Yeah, M-U-L-L-E-I-N.
Okay.
Maybe it's mullein, but I always have called it mullein. If she starts drinking that, the other thing that she really needs to do is she just needs to get out and sunbathe her lungs. Do y'all live in the country?
We do.
So you have privacy?
Relative, but...
Well, could she wear a tank top and try to get as... What I'm after is you're trying to get as much sun on the lungs as you can.
Okay.
Maybe 20, 30 minutes? Today, yeah, you can work. I mean, it's free.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those are things that can go along. Or the other thing sometimes it works is just French's yellow mustard. Rub it on the chest.
Okay. But we'll try the sun.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's out right now. Yep, I'm looking out the window. I can see it. Well, I mean, I can see the light. I can't see the sun itself, but indirectly I can see that it's light. Yeah, it's a gorgeous, beautiful day. Nobody that I know wants to be indoors today. They want to be outside.
Yeah.
I know what she's going to say to you in about 30 minutes. She's going to say, sweetheart, would you make me some fresh carrot, lemon, and ginger juice? And could you set up my folding lawn chair in the sun? I just can't wait to go outside. Don't you think that's true?
Of course.
Good answer. Yeah. Does she like being outdoors?
When she can, yeah.
Okay.
She doesn't have time to, but she's done that before, and that's good. That's a good suggestion.
Okay. Well, we got plenty of positive things to work on, so let me know how it works out, okay?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a great day, sir. Bye-bye.
You too.
Talk about a nice husband. Maybe I should cast my vote for Husband of the Year. What a good man he is. If you would like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line at open 903-589-8502. And somebody's calling the other phone line. That's why if you'll call 589-8507, then I can get you right in. But the old number, I don't think it works for the call-in program any longer. Okay. Well, lo and behold, they're going to try the old line a third time. That number don't work. This program is Health Essentials. My name is Dr. Roy Morgan. The phone number here, if you want to call in, is 903-589-8507. Okay. Well, here we go. Maybe I can get it right this time. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Dr. Morgan.
Yes. Hi, good morning.
How are you, sir?
Excellent. How are you?
I am excellent, too. So, calling because I haven't seen you in a little while, and I remember you. You probably don't remember me, but nonetheless. Actually, you're a very smart man. You probably do remember me, but I digress. I'm calling because for about the last year, my hands have been hurting quite a bit. I'm not a doctor. I don't know a lot medically. And
which part of your hands?
Like my fingers and quite a bit of my fingers. So I know my grandfather on my mother's side had bad arthritis in his hands, the big enlarged knuckles right by the fingers.
Was it rheumatoid arthritis?
Yes.
Okay. And do you think you're starting to develop rheumatoid?
I don't know, but arthritis has been kind of a word that floats around in the back of my head, almost like a pink elephant.
Okay.
That I'm not wanting to have float around in the back of my head.
No, you want to get some understanding and closure on that.
I do, because I've been painting houses for 21 years and doing remodels the last 10, and a lot of working with my hands. And
And you're also, as a painter, you're exposed to all sorts of chemicals that nobody else is.
Oh, yeah, that's very true. And I do it kind of old school and get right in there, no gloves usually. Yeah. Probably not good, but
You have my respect because you're a hardworking man. That a part of I would like to emulate myself. So, have you been to a doctor to have any tests done?
No, I have not. My wife was telling me that I probably am deficient in some kind of vitamins and maybe something else that I could do to kind of get more of a homeopathic direction in it, which I am all for. I'm kind of anti big pharma and usually.
Well, you're the only one I've ever heard of that's anti-pharma.
Yeah.
You're the only human on the planet out of 8 billion people. How does it feel to be the only person?
The Lone Ranger?
Yeah, you're the Lone Ranger. Well, can I float an idea your direction?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, let me make a statement first. I think, just from my perspective and my experience and my knowledge, that I want to pay very special attention to a person that calls me and tells me their fingers and hands are hurting. I do not want to disregard that. I don't want to cast it off. I don't want to be dismissive. I don't want to demonstrate a negligent attitude. I really want to run toward that. And so here's an idea that I'm going to offer you. Until I know otherwise, I think it'd be good to check your kidneys.
Well, that's, I think, actually one of the things whenever I did meet with you, I believe it was back this past summer, beginning of this past summer, we discovered wheat was no good for me, and I think something with my kidneys. I don't remember exactly.
Well, have you had a blood test to check your kidney function recently?
No.
I can tell you how to do that right now if you're interested.
Okay,
there's two or three ways, but one way, there is a lab testing service online called ownyourlabs.com. If you go onto that website, I can tell you which test to order, and you can get in, they'll email the results right back to you that day. Or there's two ladies here in East Texas that have a lab testing service called One Call We Draw. They can get that stuff done for you super cheap. Now, I can give you an example. The test I'm thinking of is called a comprehensive metabolic panel. That'll go a long way to taking a look at all the electrolytes. It'll take a look at some of the blood gases. It'll look at minerals. You just mentioned that a while ago. It'll look at kidney, liver function, but I think it covers a lot of stuff. And if you call these, it just costs $10. Now, if you want to go to the hospital and get it done, it's $857 when they do it. So I'm going to let you choose $10 or $857. For all I know, you're a multi-billionaire. Zelensky is. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. No, but if you had them tested, any time that the fingers and the hands start hurting, I just think I'm foolish if I don't pursue trying to find out what's going on with the kidneys. So if you have a pen and a sheet of paper, I'll tell you what to look for if you want to do it yourself.
I'm actually driving down the road. I was going to ask you, would it be okay if I called you at your office Monday and made some notes?
No, we'll just do it right now. Because when I'm at the office, okay. I've got patients. Now, if you want to come see me for an appointment, that's different. But if you're just going to call and visit for 20 minutes about what to do, I can't break away from my patients. I'm devoted to them. So I'm going to tell you right now, and so you can wait till this program is fully recorded, then you can pick it up from there and run with it. So if it's loaded tomorrow, listen to it tomorrow and write everything down. It's called a comprehensive metabolic panel. You need to have your uric acid levels tested. You need to measure your ferritin level. Do a C-reactive protein. Have your serum magnesium tested. If you want, have your vitamin D3 levels tested. Vitamin D3, if you're deficient, you could easily have your body hurt, but it's all made in the kidneys. They have a panel called a lipid panel, a CBC with a differential. That covers a lot right there. So you could even have a rheumatoid panel done if you wanted to. Those are pretty expensive. But what I'm telling you is very, very cost-effective, but you get to see the results firsthand. You get to look at them. And so if something's out of whack when it comes to the kidneys, here's reality. You're just going to have to buckle down and do what it takes to get well. We just can't do this thing sort of willy-nilly, a little here, a little there. You're just going to have to buckle down and run toward it. It's really, everything is going to be measured based on the actions you take. And if you don't take actions, you can't really complain if you have a major kidney problem 2 years from now and you go, well, that's a surprise. Well, I'm telling you, you might want to look at that.
Okay.
So I've covered the good things. And as far as I know, I'm 100% always available to anyone to help them. but it has to, it, I can't just, I mean, this is probably hard for people to understand. If I get 15 phone calls a day where somebody thinks that I could spend 30 minutes with, I don't have any of that time available. So I'm telling you, I'm telling you right now what you need to do. Yeah. Okay, good. So I think I've covered the bases. And so you've got a, something is driving a lot of inflammation in your body. And what this means is because your hands are hurting, you've got tissues that are breaking down a whole lot faster than what they should. It's just a matter of, do you want to address this or not? And I think that you do. But if you address this and figure out what the root cause of the problem is, maybe we can establish what do we do to get the body back in good working order. But ignoring it, not going to do anything. Which is, I know that's not what you're doing. I'm just giving that example for other people listening.
Sure. So primarily, I need to go back, listen to
the broadcast. Yeah, and I just covered notes. That's exactly it. I covered the things that are in your best interest, and I'm telling you, you're getting out of this whole deal super, super cheap, dude. If you went to the emergency room, $30,000 easy.
Oh yeah, easily. So beyond that, getting these tests done, these inexpensive tests done, then I need to come see you.
If you want to, that's what I'm there for. But if you want to come see me, I'm going to devote all my energy to trying to help figure this out and find out why your hands are hurting, and then come up with a plan on what do we do to restore the body to good working order.
Well, and I know you would devote all your energy to it. I've seen you in action, and I love it. Yeah. My hat is off to you. Once again, off to you. Remarkable man.
Well, thank you very much for the compliment. I appreciate that. I would just assume everybody that listens to this radio program just have the greatest amount of information and blessings. So thank you for your kind words.
Yes, you bet.
All right, I hope you have a good day.
Yes, you too.
Uh-huh, bye-bye. The other issue is this right here. What if a person has painful knuckles and joints in their fingers and it's really because of rheumatoid? Well, that's called an autoimmune disease. And that means under the right set of circumstances or conditions, your body's going to start attacking you. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you one example, and this is one thing that I studied this week. I didn't know this, but I know it now. I was reading that liver cancer is really on the rise. Liver cancer, okay? You know, liver cancer used to be relatively rare. But what do you do when liver cancer rates are just exploding exponentially? You start asking the question. Anyway, there is a very specific toxin. It's called aflatoxin. And right now, I can't remember if it was aflatoxin type A or aflatoxin type B. But what I was interested in is where it comes from. Okay, here's one example for you. They've noticed that they've tied a correlation between the more aflatoxin that you eat or ingest, it's a toxic chemical, you can't see it with the naked eye, it's in the food that you're eating. Primarily, it's found in peanut butter. And they were saying that the highest toxin rates are coming from peanuts that come from Africa. And so that kind of makes sense, where it's very warm, and they're growing peanuts, the chances of mold growing on nuts, it goes up exponentially. And so that's the source of aflatoxin. The more mold residue that you have in the food that you're eating, whether it's a grain or a nut, you know, things like that, you're getting aflatoxin. That's one of the reasons why you do not want to eat moldy foods, I promise you. If you see moldy food in the refrigerator, throw it away. It's full of toxins. But the point is, the body can only handle so much of a toxic load until it starts to take negative effects. The more toxins that run through your body, the more you're going to have health problems. Your body's going to start to break down. And think of it this way, your liver and your kidneys, what they're supposed to do is to keep your blood clean and keep your cells clean. But what happens if you put a bigger load of aflatoxin in your body by eating peanut butter all the time? Here's the solution. If you're going to eat peanut butter, eat fermented peanut butter. So you'll have, I don't know the brand to tell you, but if you purchase fermented peanut butter, you don't have to worry about aflatoxin. It's clean. How about that? You're listening to KBJS, FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.